Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to A Time for Justice. A Time for Justice is a show on the Elevated Places Network, and we're so happy that you're joining us tonight. As you all may know, this is a legal show, and we discuss legal and current events in a roundtable discussion with legal minds. We discuss this country's centuries-long failure to apply, uphold, and enforce the laws, and the overall failure of the legal system to give justice, and the negative impacts these failures have had on Black people and their Black families. Ultimately, we want fair dealing, we want justice under the law, but all too often, this is not the actions that we see. So, our guest tonight will not make those excuses for racist conduct, which is often seen, because that conduct really distracts from the truth, and the truth is the path to justice and equal protection. So let's talk about just, fair, and equitable solutions which are in the best interest of the people. Let's remove the distractions. So tonight's show, we have a very exciting show tonight. I'm so excited. I am your host, Sister Pamela Muhammad, and Brother Warren Muhammad is going to be co-hosting this show with me. Brother Warren, you all have spoken with him before, but we're really excited tonight because this show is entitled The Impact of Music and Entertainment on Social Movements, and we're doing a part two. Because as everyone, you all may have known that last week, we talked about the fact that there has been positive music, and we talked about the beauty of the positive movement and the positive music in the time periods of the 60s and the 70s, and we talked about how music does influence our people. And so tonight we want to talk about why is the music not more positive? Why is the result that we're seeing coming across these airwaves that is really bringing out some negative content a lot of times? Why is that? You know, many people want to say, well, the artist should just do better. But I think these guests are going to talk to us about how the industry works, how the industry seeks to control the content that comes into the Black community. And so we're really going to dig in deep with this conversation, because as you all know, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has talked to us about art and how important art is, and how art, the minister talks about the importance of culture and the power of the art to impact and uplift Black people. And as we all know, you know, in the minister's monumental lecture that he did entitled The Swan Song, he gave us some examples of how his own art, when he wrote the particular song, The White Man's Heaven, he talked to us about how the industry tried to control, that's how he saw it, by them trying to buy his rights to his masters and give him money. And that would have resulted in that powerful music not getting to our people, the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. So, again, this is going to be a show tonight on the impact of music and entertainment on social movements part two. And we have three great, wonderful, special guests. I'm going to go ahead and open up Brother Warren's mic and bring him on.
Assalamu alaikum, Sister Pam.
Walaikum salam, Brother Warren. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine by Allah's grace. I'm happy to be here.
Yes, sir.
I'm pleased
yes,
and honored
sir.
To be
praise
on the show again
Allah.
And looking forward to it.
All praises are due to Allah. And as the listeners may not know, Brother Warren Muhammad is an attorney. He's a graduate of Texas Southern University's Thurgood Marshall School of Law. He graduated in 1979. Brother Warren, amongst other practices, does personal injury, criminal defense, business litigation, but also attorney Muhammad has maintained an extensive practice in the field of entertainment law. And he's been an attorney for two of the original members of the Destiny's Child, Latoya Luckett, Latavia Robertson, and many people. I want to, you know, give him the opportunity to come on in into this conversation as I open up the mic for the other two guests. Next, I want to introduce our brother by the name of Anton Muhammad. And Mr. Muhammad is the president and the CEO of RHN. That stands for the Real Hip Hop Network. And the Real Hip Hop Network is the first 24/7 TV channel geared toward real hip hop lifestyle and culture. Mr. Muhammad is a seasoned entrepreneur with strong influence in the television and music industry. Mr. Muhammad has been featured on CNN Headline News, BET, Fox, Fast Company, Billboard Magazine, and more. He has been featured in documentaries such as Why We Laugh and is a noted leader, political activist, and philanthropist in the hip-hop community. Mr. Muhammad has been invited to testify before the U.S. Congress and consulted members of Congress on issues pertinent to minority media ownership and artist rights. Mr. Muhammad began his career at Morgan Stanley as a wealth manager, where he was inspired to start the Real Hip Hop Network. He was educated at the University of Miami and was a running back for the school's nationally acclaimed football team. So, Mr. Muhammad, Brother Anton.
I'm happy to be here. I'm looking to engage in popular and powerful podcast. I've been a big fan of you, sis, and big fan of the podcast for a long time. And I believe we got a lot of ground to cover on this powerful topic in reference to media and its impact on society.
Yes, sir. All praises are due to Allah, Brother Anton. We've been a fan of yours for a long time, so you know, the pleasure is ours. Thank you so much for joining us. Yes, sir. And so the next person I want to bring up, and this is also very, very, very exciting, because we have our brother, K. Reno. And Brother K. Reno is a rapper and entrepreneur. I pulled some things off the internet about Brother K. Reno because he's a well-known rapper in this nation. Brother K. Reno is a rapper and entrepreneur. He is the founder of the South Park Coalition, a collective of hip-hop artists, primary based in Houston. He is a pioneer of the Southern hip-hop scene and has been rapping since 1986 when he debuted with his group. I think it was called Real Kill, possibly. Brother K. Reno has... He just has a plethora. He has, I know, many platforms that he's operating from right now. And Brother K. Reno, as this article says, has spent his career as an independent artist and has released all his albums, according to this article, since 2004 on his label, Black Book International. Now, he may have some up-to-date corrections he wants to bring out to me, so please forgive me, Brother K. Reno, but it's just so beautiful for you to be joining us, and I wanted to open up your mic. Brother K. Reno.
Assalamu alaikum, family.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother K. Reno. How are you?
I'm blessed. I'm honored to be a part of the show. Thankful to be included in this conversation and looking forward to hopefully with the blessing of God for all of us to say things that will enlighten people moving forward on this topic.
All praises are due to Allah. We are so honored to have you, Brother K. Reno, on the show. I wanted to quote again from an article that appeared in the Final Call, and it's a quote by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and he says, "A cultural giant is a warrior on another level," said Minister Farrakhan. He said, "You can heal a nation with a song, with a movie, with a play," he said. "In the early days, black entertainers dressed up and offered the beauty of their voices or their talents. They didn't sell sex," the minister said. He said, "But the aim of this world is to sell sex and appeal to the lowest desires of the people instead of raising them." And that's an article that was written by our brother Naba Muhammad, and it's an article, I believe it's called Cultural Warriors, and it talks about the impact of, you know, entertainers, music, and it's a 2017 article called, so I will be getting the exact name of that article. But let's just go ahead and get started. Tell us about yourselves and why you think this topic is so important. I think that would be a good way to start.
This is Brother Eitan Muhammad from Real Hip Hop Network. I'll kick it off. For me, I have been a lifelong hip hop fan, and one of the things, I came into the teachings, you know, at the age of 19, and right after college, my first thing that I established was a hip hop concert promotions firm called Ram Enterprises. And I was inspired by the powerful message of brothers like Chuck D and KRS-One and so much, and Ice Cube, and, you know, all the brothers who kind of paved the way, and Tupac and all of the brothers who at that era, the golden era, you know, intertwined political messages with some of the gritty, you know, sounds of the street that really captivated my generation. And it became, you know, something that I had dedicated my life to. I took my business acumen and my skill to be able to, you know, kind of carve out a place, because I saw the importance of, you know, how hip-hop, literally starting with myself, changed political perspectives, gave me an understanding of black history and black culture, and gave me a root in Pan-Africanism and introduced me to the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan. As a matter of fact, Chuck D saying that he's a follower of Farrakhan, don't say that you understand until you hear the man. That was the first time that I said, who is Minister Farrakhan? And I think I need to learn more about him. That kind of understanding, you know, led to, you know, me becoming Muslim and eventually adopting Islam as my way of life. And anybody who listened to that music at the time, hip-hop was the CNN of the streets. And we knew that the Rodney King riots was going to come well before any of the mainstream news outlets about it, due to our brothers in NWA talking about the treatment our brothers were receiving by the LAPD, you know, we're straight out of Compton, and also with the F the Police song. So activism and hip-hop and message music was really the climate of the golden era of the time, and the powers that be saw our people waking up and actively began to engage a dumbing down of the culture to get to where we are now. And that's the reason why I felt it was important for us to establish a real hip-hop network, so that we could be able to have a platform to where brothers who rap like my brother K. Reno, who By the way, brother, I listened to your whole album. You are absolutely phenomenal.
Thank you, bro. Praise be to Allah. All praise to Allah. Thank you so much, big brother.
And we built this platform for brothers like yourself and also the mainstream brothers who have positive and powerful music out there that the mainstream won't play. We created Real Hip Hop Network to be able to have that visual, because unlike what many people understand is, you know, culture is a weapon. It can be used against you or for you. And how our music goes out around the world shapes the perception of how people see black and brown people all around the world. And we cannot leave that power in the hands of our enemies who choose cultural stereotypes and a lot of races and sometimes anti-black imagery dressed up in gangsterism and some other tropes, you know, like the, you know, sexually promiscuous female. You know, they really destroyed some of the early imagery of folks like Queen Latifah and the Ladies First imagery, wearing crowns and African names and being Islamically rooted and, you know, people wearing the African medallions. They got away from that to make our people, you know, worship, you know, the false materialism and filth of today. So we believe that in order to counteract that, we needed to create a space where we can be able to project who we are to the world by black folks, for black folks, you know, with a conscious mindset that's designed to put out positive imagery that will positively reflect on black people, the black family, and our black nation.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. Brother K. Reno, did you want to, you know, weigh in, please? Talk to us.
Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. First of all, thank you, Brother Anton, for just really breaking down some of that history, because when I was listening to you, I was thinking the same thing. And I've told the story many times how Chuck D's song was the first time I heard the name Farrakhan on that very line that you quoted. And at the time, I didn't know what he was saying. He was just follower of Ron. I didn't know what he was saying. What was he saying right there? What is that word? Because we've never heard that name before. So right. So that's amazing. I wonder how many people got connected to Mr. Farrakhan's name just by hearing that song. But me personally, I'm like everybody else from my era. I fell in love with rap and hip hop in the late 70s. Not to age myself, but just, you know, hearing Rapper's Delight, hearing the Message by Grandmaster Flash and The Brinks by Curtis Blow and all those songs like that. And just to show the example that hip hop has always been conscious, you know, because we're talking way back then, and those were kind of songs that were being written and recorded. But the difference was they were getting radio play, because I don't think that the enemy understood power and the future impact, whether it be culturally, whether it be consciously, or whether it definitely financially, that this new genre was going to have. So that's why they grabbed a hold of it early when they figured out that this was going to be something not only that was going to be financially lucrative for them, but it was also something that they could gain control of in terms of taking the content in the direction that they wanted to take it to, and killing two or three birds with one stone by degenerating us through our own art. So music is medicine or it's poison, depending on who's administering it and putting the ingredients together. So I started writing in 83, Sister Pam, and I released my first record in 87. And at that time, that was one of the first rap records to come out of the city of Houston, along with the Ghetto Boys, the early Ghetto Boys and a couple of others. So since that time, just doing it independently, thankful for my dad, who financed my career earlier, and he always had that foresight, even when I didn't, even just me being just a young buck, just wanting to try to be what Run DMC was, be what LL Cool J was. He had that mindset to like, well, let's start our own label. Let's do this ourselves, even though we did go through the processes of shopping our demos and labels and all that. I give him a lot of the credit because he instilled that independence from a business standpoint in me. And it allowed me to, like, once he decided that he didn't want to be involved in music anymore, I had already been well-trained to run my own company, even though I didn't know I was going through the training process at that time. So I'm thankful to be in this 40 years later, and thankful to be a part of conversations like this that hopefully young up-and-coming artists can listen to and can hear and maybe help them avoid going through some of the pitfalls and the mess-ups that I went through. So I'm just glad to be here.
So, Spam.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Go right ahead, Brother Warren. Yes. And then I have a question for you.
Okay. I'd like to introduce this subject from my perspective, which is a little more senior perspective, as I'm a little more senior than my brothers here.
But right. Okay.
I got involved really with dealing with record labels in 1979. And I can clearly remember traveling to New York and dealing with label executives and Los Angeles. And the music at that time was still predominantly R&B. Hip-hop was starting to make its entrance. However, the labels initially thought that hip-hop wouldn't last. They gave it 6 months, a year, 2 years. They thought that it would die out because they just not, as Brother K. Reno just alluded to, they could not foresee the strength and the rise and the longevity that hip-hop would ultimately have. So they really ignored it in the beginning. And none of the major labels would offer any semblance of a deal to a rap artist until I think it was the Sugar Hill Gang got their first label, which really was an independent label, and made a release, and then it caught on. So I witnessed this, and once it began to catch on, the labels then entered into a frenzy to grab up as much of the hip-hop as they could. So in the beginning, I represented R&B producers, and of course I grew up on R&B and the blues. And hip hop was just so new. I had no understanding of it at all. But I remember one day I was lying on my couch and I was kind of, you know, you're in that zone, you're half sleeping, you're half awake, and I had my radio on. I had a radio on, and I heard this group saying, talking about the maker, the owner, the cream of the planet Earth, father of civilization, God of the universe. And I woke up to whoa.
Wow.
They spitting a lesson, you know, and that was Brand Nubian.
That's right.
That really is what, that's what woke me up to hip-hop and the power of the message, because here were these brothers straight up spitting a lesson on their music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I began to really explore hip-hop and then familiarize myself with the different artists and the message that was being put out, and really I became a hip hop fanatical fan. And I remember K. Reno when he first got started, because his father and I would talk often, and his father would call me, and you know, we would just have conversations about labels and setting up labels and independent releases and distribution and stuff like that. So I really want to give back up what K. Reno said, because I interacted with his dad, who was a very, very knowledgeable and wise man with great vision, and that's responsible for Caleb, you know, embarking on the path that he embarked on. So I kind of want to give a different perspective in how the labels completely ignored hip-hop in the beginning but they couldn't let that kind of message persist without them seeking to get some control. So we'll talk as we go forward. We can talk more about how that happened and who some of those players and actors were. But I just kind of wanted to make that introduction on the subject.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Thank you for that, Brother Warren. And you know what? As we talk about social movements, we know we're going to just deal with the condition of black people today, because the condition of black people today is one where we are disproportionately suffering. We're under a genocidal plot. You know, there's a depopulation agenda. According to a brother by the name of Minister Paul Scott, he wrote an article called The Exodus or Extermination, Escaping the Trap in 2020. So we're going to make that our backdrop for a need for a social movement, a need to be impacted. You know, our youth are being shaped by what they call this weaponized hip-hop. And on that stance, I wanted to say this. So, Brother Warren, you and I were talking last week about how the industry, when it was more independent then, when artists had more control over their lyrics then, when we lived segregated communities where we were united. So, the Staple Singers' father would sit down with Curtis Mayfield, and they might sit down with Lou Rawls, and they may really police their content. And so we had more of that black thought and what black people needed to overcome on the airwaves, like the OJs singing about, you know, Ship Ahoy or messaging my music and all of these things. So we're going to come back to now. And how did this industry get into our business? By the, I guess, what we call the, how the industry is controlled today, the mainstream. How did that happen? And what is the impact of that, where you have these multinational companies and, you know, the competing, Brother Anton, is such that you have had to do the solution, of course, of having your own platform. Brother Carino has always been independent. And Brother Warren, you've seen this fight for independence as an attorney working with independent rappers, you know, from the beginning, I think, of your career. So let's talk about that.
Go ahead, Brother Warren. Go ahead, Brother Warren. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Brother Anton. You're our guest. Come on in.
Yes, sir. First of all, Sister Pamela, I think that we need to take it back to the beginning. Black people have been marred by the perceptions of media, by the misperceptions of racist historical accounts to who we are in the world, and it was part of the plot to be able to basically misrepresent who black people were in the annals of history. Going back to when white artists like Al Jolson went into blackface to sing songs like Mammy, and that went into the representation of black folks in, you know, the Aunt Jemima characters, the slave narratives, all the way up to the caricatures of the drug dealer, the Superfly pimp roles that we play out in a lot of cases in modern-day hip-hop culture. The black woman as the vixen. The first video vixen was a young lady by the name of Sarah Bartman, an African captive that was basically placed in a human zoo with her buttocks on display for the freaks of Paris and Europe to be able to ogle over the voluptuous form of the black woman, and they called her Hottentot Venus. Disgraced this woman so much that they even had her private parts dissected, her vulva. They had her skeleton, you know, on display, and Nelson Mandela was the one in the 90s who, you know, asked for her to get a proper burial instead of being on display in the Louvre Museum in Paris. And we see these racist caricatures played out primarily because the dollars that are the supporters of the art form find black folks who are willing to be able to play out these caricatures live to the rest of the world, and they project an image of us that is not necessarily created by who we are, but is designed by an archetype that paints black folks as the picture of criminality, inferiority, and also hypersexualization. And we need to take the hands of our culture out of other people's purview in order for us to be able to redirect how we are perceived, because image is power. You know, you look at the Jewish Holocaust Museum, they talk about the Book of the Poison Mushroom and Joseph Goebbels and his propaganda campaign, you know, that affected, you know, how the Jews were perceived and placed in ghettos. Their history, ironically enough, mirrors ours in a lot of ways. And, you know, in a lot of cases, the ones who end up in charge of exploiting black talent happens to be, you know, a lot of prominent members in the Jewish community. You know, we end up in a situation where, you know, we don't understand the legal side of it. And Brother Walt can probably, Boy Warren can probably attest to this, you know, and we end up basically, you know, losing our control. There was a brother, you know, Sam Cooke, you know, he had an attorney, ironically enough,
right,
who was responsible for organizing his corporation documents, you know, and in the organization of his corporate documents, he just so happened to place himself as the owner and president of the company and left our brother Sam Cooke without any ownership in the publishing company he started, and all the artists that were signed to him, you know, were unaware that this Jewish attorney, you know, basically robbed, you know, the ownership of these black artists right from under them, primarily because Brother Sam Cooke, you know, they trusted this attorney who had a fiduciary right to serve him, but he ended up stealing, you know, one of the most important movements for creativity, you know, and control, you know, in the modern era. And by the way, I should say that Sam Cooke was influenced by the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He and Muhammad Ali were very close friends, and a number of artists were, just as hip-hop was influenced heavily, you know, by the 5% Nation and the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, of course, Minister Farrakhan himself. And we began to see, you know, hip-hop forming a conscious cabalion, and began to start. As a matter of fact, the first one of the first founders, you know, the Zulu Nation, they formed the native tongues. They had Tribe Called Quest and Queen Latifah. And Afrika Bambaataa told me that his inspiration for starting the Zulu Nation was, you know, inspired by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam. So we are looking at, you know, the key element for us to be able to gain control is to own the platforms that we're on, and to be able to, you know, of course, finance the production of our own art so that we can be able to maintain greater levels of control. And as the conversation goes on, we can talk about how we do that and some of the plans we have for doing that. You know, I got my brother Bernard Taft. He's the head of our RHN Music Group. He's a former MC from Section 8 Mob, which was one of the prominent rap groups out of D.C. And he worked with a lot of the major players like Dick Griffey, who was the, you know, early record label that you know, Death Row launched off of, and he worked really heavily in the R&B spaces. And his experiences in the early eras of gangster rap and his desire from that point, you know, we had been childhood buddies, you know, and if, you know, looked at the problems going on with hip-hop and decided that we would take this on together along with, you know, a lot of our other folks, you know, in our company, you know, we wanted to be able to make a change in creating a TV network projected out to the world that put out the kind of hip-hop that represented what real hip-hop meant to the world. We wanted to use it as a way of defining us to the rest of society outside of the confines of what our enemies' perceptions are. So that's important,
yes,
controlling your message.
Yes, sir. That's beautiful. Thank you for that. Real quick, Brother Warren,
like
I want you to jump in on that. Because, you know,
yes, like
according to Claude Anderson, according to Claude Anderson, he said in Powernomics that this structure of this industry is that blacks have to ask for permission to use white-owned mass communication vehicles to reach out to other blacks or discuss sensitive racial issues, you know, and the fact that we are controlled. They create images of black people. They're the owners of the media. So, Brother Warren, I know you wanted to kind of get into that topic or whatever other topic, you know, because it seems like we're being occupied by people who are not in our community, and we can't even control the messages except in these type of major competitive endeavors like what our brother Anton is describing, which makes you all cultural warriors, right? So go ahead, Brother Warren. I want to put that
well, one
there.
Of the things that I observed in my experience was what I call the mainstreaming of hip-hop. When hip-hop started independently, the brothers were in the parks with their turntables and the beatboxes. And as I said in the beginning, the major labels were averse to signing hip-hop acts. But once they realized how lucrative it could be and how powerful the music was with the generation, they began to sign artists to record deals. And I kind of compare it, an analogy would be like the old Negro League baseball team, where we had all of the talent in our leagues that played in our communities and slept in our hotels and played at our baseball parks. And that was a whole industry that thrived off of baseball. Eventually, Major League Baseball realized and signed Jackie Robinson, which broke the color line. Now, they were able to pay an individual a lot of money, such as Jackie Robinson and then those who came afterward. But at the same time, it destroyed an entire industry that served the black community. I kind of relate that to major labels starting to sign hip-hop artists. When they sign those artists, of course, they sign contracts, and as Brother Anton alluded to, most times either the brothers didn't understand the contracts or they had lawyers not of their own kind who would not disclose all of the contents of the contracts. And even I clearly remember negotiating or attempting to negotiate a deal for an artist, and I was asking for certain points in the contract, and I really had it planned out. I ran down this whole analysis of the industry and the exploitative features of the agreements and everything, and the record exec told me point blank, he said, "Warren, you are exactly right on every point. However, your client is not big enough to make us change our contracts." And I never forgot that. So they could always find another artist who would sign it without reading it. You know, so I think as the artists began to sign these contracts, with those contracts comes the power of control. Many of those contracts, with the artists would be signing over their name and likeness and image to the label quite often without realizing. So now the label could control the name, release the image whether he wanted to or didn't, or control how the image was portrayed. But they would own the masters and the rights to the masters, take all the publishing in most cases. You know, so it was those exploitative contracts that empowered the labels to be able to do as they wish with the artists. And one last anecdote, I remember being in a studio in New York with a client, and we were mixing down his record. And on one of his songs, he said the word Jew in one of his lines. And the label owner, which were Jewish, that he had signed to, said that he had to take that word out of his song. Well, he and I looked at each other, and it took about a half a second. We told him, hell no, we're not taking nothing out of our song. They said, we can't make you take it out of the song, but we decide whether it's ever released or not. So that was just an example of the kind of control that they can exercise when you sign it at a major label. And, you know, at some point I'd like for Kay Reno to maybe weigh in on the pros and cons and benefits of his experience having operated independently without a label, well, without signing to a major record agreement.
Yeah. You know, because I guess my question, because I started out doing some entertainment law too, and, you know, looking at those contracts, I never could understand why the artists would get, what, 7 to 12%, and they did all the work. And, you know, you talk about the creative control. I mean, who says that these are the type of contracts that people have to engage in? I mean, you look at the, according to the article that's in the final call, the money was expected to reach $771 billion, according to a 2014 Entertainment Outlook. Now, that was with music and entertainment market worldwide, with the United States entertainment market being a third of the global industry. They talk about the recorded music industry, which includes concerts and all of that. It grew to be $15.5 billion, with thoughts that it would be $18 billion in 2020. Brother Anton, they talk about this film and entertainment industry, you know, being $9.9 billion. This was in 2016, you know, with home videos being $20 billion and just extreme amounts of money. And so that's one thing. And then I just want to throw this out here, and Brother K. Reno, please, you know, with the article from Minister Paul Scott, you know, he really brings up the issue about why are black people in such terrible condition disproportionately. You know, we're disproportionately in prisons, we're disproportionately in special ed, you know, you name it, we're there. And he suggests that it's because of it's systematically designed that way. And so when we have this powerful communication control outside of our community, you know, this is also part of the conversation I think we're having with distribution, ownership, markets, independent artists, and messages, the power of messages. So, Brother K. Reno, you know, did you want to go ahead and respond or to what Brother Warren posed, or anything you want to say? Yes, sir.
Absolutely. And to the point you just mentioned, it's 100% systemic. It's 1,000% systemic. If you look at just our history in this country, everything that this country has eaten off of has come from our hands. It's come out of our minds. When we were always taught that we was just savages and bones in our noses and things of that nature, but yet we are responsible for building all of the edifices that you see that are major, major landmarks here in the United States. Uncivilized people wouldn't be able to do that. Now, if you look at why they have been able to control and have that degree of control for so long, is because they always played on our lack of knowledge. So like Brother Warren and Brother Anton was talking about members of the Jewish community, that's been their MO since day one. And from the time of slavery, when you have individuals who were not even allowed to learn how to read or write, we couldn't process those aspects. So when it's time, when we get to what we call the modern day, and these contracts are presented to us, contracts being presented particularly in R&B, but particularly in hip-hop, where you have young brothers and sisters coming straight off the street, coming straight out the hood, coming straight out of poverty situations, never seen $1,000 at one time before. Now you got somebody that wants to give you $25,000. You got somebody that wants to give you $100,000, and we think that that's a lot of money. So this contract is signed, whereas Brother Warren says, you basically are signing over your entire image, your entire likeness, and your name. You're giving all of this to these individuals, not thinking about the long term, not thinking about the fact that I'm going to come into the realization and understanding one day that this is not a fair contract. So when I come into that understanding that this is not a fair contract, by then it's either too late because you've milked so much out of me. I may have run my course as an artist in terms of my popularity, in terms of the record sales, that it's too late for me to benefit off of it. Or, like Brother Warren says, okay, if you decide that you want to rebel, then we will, what they call blackball you, but they'll whiteball you out of the industry and you'll never be seen or heard from again. See, music is only one of the components that they have always used to destroy us. Music is just one of the components. If you look at just drugs, if you look at guns, if you look at fashion these days and times where they feminizing black men, you look at the chemicals in the food, and you look at the false history that's been taught to us, all of these things are weapons that have always been used, and music is just in that line, just on that list. And those of us who love to do it, we got into it because of the love of it. We wanted to do it. I can speak for myself and many artists that came along with me, and probably artists that I've never even met. Your initial attraction to this art form is not money. Your initial attraction to it is the love of it. Man, that look like fun. It's something I want to do. It's something that I can get good at. You realize you want to enter the business side of it once you kind of see, well, you know, I'm pretty good at it now and everybody else making money or perceived to be making money. So it's absolutely systemic, and it's a tie-in. We can't ever forget or lose sight or not be aware of the tie-in that this weaponization of music has to the prison industrial complex, and how it's all tied into the depopulation agenda that Sister Pam talked about. None of this stuff is accidental, and none of it is just, wow, it's not disconnected. It's all lumped and meshed together. So the key is to educate young artists on the things that we didn't know coming up. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, I was independent. I was, you know, me and my father doing our thing, but it was a lot we didn't know. And as a result of that, we took a lot of hits. We took a lot of losses because of the lack of knowledge of the business that we didn't have. And my goal is to try to shortcut and just get artists to bypass those mistakes by urging them, hey, man, learn about publishing. Learn about getting a lawyer that you can trust that can go over these contracts and explain this terminology to you. Learn about these things. I'm watching real quick. I'm reading an article about Pusha T. And I don't know if y'all saw that about Pusha T. I'm reading an article yesterday and find out that he's the one who created the McDonald's jingle that ba-da-ba-ba-ba, I'm loving it. He created that in the early 2000s. And now he got compensated, but he didn't get nearly compensated for what it was worth, because you're talking about an ad campaign that has been running for almost two decades and is still running, and he hadn't nearly benefited financially from it the way he should have. Now, part of that, of course, is at the root of that, of course, is the fact that the people at McDonald's, they intentionally made sure that whatever it is he didn't know in terms of protecting himself and benefiting from that fully, they made sure he didn't do that. But a part of it is just our lack of knowledge. We didn't understand, because had he understood, I know that brother would have been on his note and would have made sure that he got properly compensated for that, because that's something that could have created generational wealth for that brother, you know, because everybody knows that slogan. Everybody knows how much it's generated. So we got to educate those coming up behind us.
Yes, sir. Beautiful, beautiful. And you know what? This is a question. We give our listeners the opportunity to ask questions and comments. So if you have a question or a comment for one of our panelists, please press the number one to get in the host queue. I'm going to take this call from Sister Donna. Sister Donna has a comment. Yes, ma'am. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Donna.
Well, alaikum salam, Sister Attorney Pamela, and to your esteemed panelists, Brother Anton, Kay Reno, and Attorney Warren. First of all, I'm being so educated right now. And Brother Kay Reno, you just blew my mind about Pusha T. That, and my blood is boiling, because that makes me so angry to hear that and know that. But I wanted to make a brief comment to go into a question. And you really kind of prefaced it, Brother Kay Reno, with your comments that you just made about taking the young people. But a few months ago, back in November, I had the opportunity to cover Young Dolph's funeral in Memphis. And one of the people that I spoke to at the time was Drummer Boy, who you know is a producer and a music maker, and DJ Bebe from Out in Your Way. And one thing that Drummer Boy mentioned was the need to control things, as you all have been speaking, on an executive level. And he talked about us coming together and creating a music studio where our people can come in, our young people, and they can be influenced, and influenced in a proper way. Because as long as they're out there just, you know, going everywhere to anybody, they're going to be forced to put certain things in their music and be forced to put out a particular product, especially coming up out of this Memphis area, which is a growing community, you know, of entertainment artists. And we have a history of music here, including conscious music. So I wanted to ask the panelists, what is it that we need to do, though, to make that vision come forward? You know, as we talk about unity, what are some of the first steps? Because he talked about the money. He was like, we got the people to do it, but the money. But there are entertainers that are making some money. So how do we make that happen? How do we begin to marry that so that we can capture this generation and get them on the right path towards consciousness and conscious music production? And I thank you for your time, and thank you again for this enlightening program.
Thank you. All praise due to Allah. Thank you, Sister Donna.
Well, that's one of the questions that I wanted to direct to Brother Anton. I think following up on Sister Donna's question, Brother Anton, would you discuss some of the obstacles and challenges that you face in establishing and working to establish an independent platform, network, media company, things of those nature? What are some of the challenges and obstacles that face us and some of the solutions to that? Am I here?
Yeah, yes. We hear you.
Brother Anton?
I don't know if Brother Anton heard you.
Okay. Brother Anton. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, Brother Warren. My phone went on mute.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was just saying, you're aware of a lot of the challenges that we faced in the, you know, development of the Real Hip Hop Network. Ironically enough, the reason that I was inspired to do bring Real Hip Hop Network into existence, I was working at Morgan Stanley, and Morgan Stanley was doing the merchant and acquisition work for Viacom at the time. So many of our people were upset that our only black-owned cable TV network was being sold to to a majority white-owned company. And that meant that our representation as, you know, black folks, and also the only outlet at that time that consistently played, you know, black music videos was BET, because MTV, of course, did not regularly play music videos by black artists. And I felt like it was important for us to be able to make certain that we had a representation that was black-owned and operated, that maintained our own hands, and that we were able to shape the ideas and the image of who we are to the rest of the world. You know, they say that without vision, the people perish. And the image of what our people want to become in the world is shaped by what they see. And for the most part, you ask a young black person under 15 what they want to be, they'll tell you they want to be a rapper, they want to be an athlete, basketball player, football player. That's because that's what they are exposed to. But for the first time, when the Black Panther movie came out, and they saw scientists, you know, like the fictional character Shuri, you know, basically going toe-to-toe with white scientists with incredible technology that was generated from a fictitious African government, it really began to start inspiring people. And I saw the reaction of a young girl who was under the age of 6 who spoke to the actress Letitia Wright and said that when she grows up, she wants to be a scientist just like her. I understood at that moment the power of imagery to be able to shape fiction to science fact in the world. Matter of fact, most of the major accomplishments come from the arts and what they demonstrate to the world. And that's the reason why the Jewish community is so protective of their race, being misportrayed or maligned in any way. And they usually remove it before it even gets to the word, because there's something very powerful about the spoken word and about the image. And the biggest obstacle that I had in the beginning is being able to fight against these conglomerates. You know, there are three major music labels that own everything. There are about four major media companies that own everything. In the cable and TV business, there was Comcast, there's DirecTV, there's Dish Network, and, you know, of course, Disney stepped up to become the pioneer for streaming. Netflix came into play, you know. But in my early days, you had to get on Comcast if you were going to reach 80% of America, and they refused to put us on, ultimately. And that's when we came up with a company called RealStar, and we began to start developing a platform for what they call an MVNO service, our own mobile phone, ISP, an internet service, because we felt like in order to be able to have the control of our TV channel, we need to make certain that we control the platforms. Because when I look at it, and even the money, the currency, when you look at the Russian situation, and I know this seems like it's way out of left field, but you see how much control the world has over the financial industry. Having your own digital transactions, being able to control the platforms that your apps are put on, being able to make certain that you control the social media platforms that you communicate across. There are right now literally four companies that can shut your whole world down. Google, which owns YouTube, Facebook, which owns Instagram. You know, you got Jack Dorsey, who runs Twitter. And if you do not set up a massive plan to be able to make certain that you control every aspect of how you get your message out to the world, you're going to hurt. You know, and we now have the metaverse, which is, you know, the new shiny thing. And you're looking at opportunities that new artists can be able to raise money through what they call NFTs. That's non-fungible tokens. It's based on a blockchain technology that basically allows you to be able to use tokens to pay for digital goods, you know, in the world, and allows you to be able to keep track of it, you know. And
yes,
it these are opportunities for artists who are launching albums to be able to raise capital to fund projects, and to also to be able to make certain that their fans can be able to participate potentially in the revenue sources. This is a unique way for us to be able to begin to start developing the financial resource to make this happen. And for me,
yes, sir.
You know, I realized that, you know, the Wu-Tang principle, cash rules everything around. We started looking at being able to create an investment fund to be able to finance our operations first, so we can be able to not only create and license content. The biggest issue Brother K. Reno talked about with the Pusha T situation, synchronization of royalty. Okay, that's the royalty that controls sync with video, film, television, and streaming. And the contracts that are generated from sync royalties, you know, can be extremely lucrative, especially if you're talking about residuals over long terms. And that needed to be negotiated in the beginning of the platform. Real Hip Hop Network's strategy is to be able to create a platform where our artists can be able to engage with those corporations directly. We can be able to use, you know, contracts that are favorable to artists, and making certain that they get repeat royalties that will accrue over time consistently, and make certain that in a very powerful, intelligent, and also conscious manner, because what people see about who we are does affect how we impact the world.
Okay. So, Brother Anton, that's awesome information. Thank you so much. I'm going to take a couple of callers, but people are going to definitely have to get your information so we can they can directly get in contact with you, because you got a wealth of information. I'm going to open up this call. We had a special call coming in from Brother Terrence Muhammad. Brother Terrence?
Assalamu alaikum.
Wow, Lake of Salon, Brother Terrence. Brother
Terrence
is the co-host of the Elevated Places with Dr. Ava Muhammad. So thank you for calling. Yes, sir.
No. I absolutely love this conversation. I'm just getting excited just listening to the brothers, because, you know, it's funny, I always tell people I'm not an artist, but I'm in the music industry. I've been in it for some years, and I had to understand that I'm in the music industry not being an artist, because the industry, the music industry, is bigger than what most people understand and know about. And you can actually make more money not being the artist, but a lot of people don't understand that process. But there's a couple of things I just wanted to touch on right quick that I think was kind of alluded to when we were talking about Black music in the early 60s and the 70s, the artists were connected to the conscious folks. So people were sitting around having conversations, and that music would, you know, it would come out in the music. And so it was no mistake, though, how hip-hop was birthed, because we got to remember who was in New York in the 70s, you know, prior to 75, who was in New York, and when did hip-hop birth, and, you know, where did Father-in-law Clarence 13 at, you know, leave his teachings? So all of that teachings in New York, which was rich in New York, all of that consciousness came up into that hip-hop one way or another. It was touched by the Nation of Islam and the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. But it came up in it, but at the same time, all of that consciousness, all of that with A Different World, Bill Cosby, and all that consciousness, that's when the industry, of course, had to take control over and change the narrative. Anything that was getting powerful and getting them conscious and doing stuff for themselves, the enemy wants to come in. But I wanted to bring into the conversation that the brothers talked about is sometimes we blame the artists for the music that's out there, but we don't understand the narrative and the social engineering of the radio stations, the industry, what
that's
people
right.
are paying folks to put out there. And then the dynamic that then artists start moving into this digital world and social media and making their own streams, but a lot of folks are still having a narrative that they want to make the money, they want to wear the bling. But something that somebody recently said, and I can't think of the artist that just said it, it could have been Bun B. He said, the richer Jay-Z gets, the less he looks rich. And, you know, most folks that are not rich are trying to look rich. They have the bling, they have this, but the more and more you get around rich folks, people, they look less and less, quote-unquote, what it looks like to be rich. And I think what the brothers have been talking about just now is how can those artists that's coming in learn the music business. And I think that's the biggest thing the artists have to know is learn the business as you're developing your craft, but you need to learn the business. Because if you just produce your craft, by the time you finish mastering your craft, if you haven't learned the business, then your craft will be owned and marketed and profited off somebody that don't look like you and it's not you. So I think the biggest thing we need to teach is how to own your stuff and make money off your stuff versus someone else controlling everything that you do, from your distribution, from your merchandise, from your TV, from all aspects that you put your creativity in. And this is what the brothers are laying out. It's a lot of business game that they're teaching, or a lot of business information that's needed that a lot of upcoming artists don't want, because they want that quick money, they want the bling, but they don't understand the business. And I turn it back over.
Yes. Oh, beautiful. Thank you so much, Brother Terrence, for that. We appreciate you calling in. Yes, sir. All right, then. Assalamu alaikum. And if you want to stay on, Brother Terrence, you can definitely stay on. You know, and I think as we're kind of anybody else with a question or a comment, please press the number one to get in the host queue. Because, Brother K. Reno, one of the things I heard the brothers talking about is unity. I saw an article that you did where you talk about the South Park Coalition and how that's a coalition that you all form that strengthens those artists around you. You talk about how in your article, in your interview, how people have to develop mutual respect for one another. And that's back in the day when you had Brother Nip and Dope E was a member of the coalition. But I just want to throw this out here. When I was reading this book on the Staple Singers, one of the things that really stuck out to me is how they would describe these gatherings. They'd have Mom Staples would cook, and Red Fox would come and get a plate, and Diane Carroll, or, you know, Mahalia Jackson. You had Lou Rawls. You had Curtis Mayfield. You had all these people together in proximity, like Brother Terrence is saying, you know, exchanging ideas and making ourselves strong. So I think those are other platforms. As we go into the end of the show, let's talk about some of these platforms and successful platforms like yours, Brother Anton. So if we can take one more caller real fast, and then we can possibly come back to that. Let me open up the mic. We have a frequent caller, Sister Marguerite. Sister Marguerite, you have a comment?
Yes, a comment. Assalamu alaikum, brothers, and Sister Pamela, happy Savior's Day. Wonderful conversation.
Happy Savior's Day to you, ma'am.
And the brother brought up about Sam Cooke, who came from a town in Mississippi that's not far from my hometown. So I grew up on Sam Cooke. But there is a Netflix movie, The Two Killings of Sam Cooke, that went into what he... the brother was mentioning. A lot of people don't know Sam Cooke was a big activist. He was really in the civil rights movement and wanting to produce, to make a record company. And that attorney that he had hired, who stole his company, he was the next day supposed to go to New York and confront him when he discovered that he had put himself in as owner of the company. And of course he died the night before. And it is known among his Sam Cooke's closest friends that that lawyer was the one who murdered him, had him killed. And it is interesting also to note the money, the royalties, I should say, that had come with Sam Cooke's legacy, his family never got a dime of it. and they don't get any money today, that lawyer and his family continue to collect royalties from Sam Cooke's music. And as a matter of fact, that was the money that they used to produce that One Night in Miami Garbage. So,
yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for that, Sister Marguerite.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. That's welcome. So going back, you know, we can talk. We've got a couple minutes left. We still have plenty of time to discuss. But, you know, a lot of times, brothers, we're talking about separation as well. So this whole independent movement that you all are bringing and how we can come together, you know, it seems like we kind of got a separation platform under the term independent yeah. businesses. So please, everybody, anybody.
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to touch on a point that was brought out by Brother Anton, and then there's something that I want to try to slip in if I can. But we're talking about, as you just said, separation. We have to build an entire world to separate. You can't just separate on one level. You have to build it. You have to build a whole world, because we're dealing with principalities, as the scriptures say, governments, and spiritual wickedness in high places. Now, Brother Anton just said that there are three or four companies that can literally pull the plug on everything you're doing. The YouTube or Twitter or Instagram, three companies.
Amazon.
You can build and Amazon. Yes, it's the fourth one. And you can build all you want on the ground level, but at some point they can pull the plug on you. So I'm making a clarion call to our young people, like the young sister who says she wants to be a scientist. What kind of scientist? We need, especially our young people, studying physics. They need to be studying cryptography. Studying all of the computer sciences, and correct me if I'm wrong, Brother Anton, because we have to have all of these sciences to be able to build out independent platforms where someone else can't pull the plug on it because they're in control of it. So it's very, very critical that we understand the depth and the breadth of this thing that has to be built around and building up this whole world. And I want to.
Yes, sir. And I wanted to throw out there, though, Brother Warren. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You want to say something?
Well, no, just the point of the brothers selling CDs out of the trunks of their cars. At one point, there was no other way to distribute music, but then they start distributing CDs out of trunks of their cars. And, you know, now we have Master P, potato chips, and all kinds of things. So, you know, I think there's some room for creativity across, all, you know, it's an antibody. That's all I'm saying. But I agree with you.
Well, Brother Warren made so many powerful points, you know, because if we're going to take this to the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and as expressed by Minister Farrakhan consistently, is the need to do for self and to create the independent world. It depends first on our financial capability, you know, and when we think about the powerful institutions that exist in European society, they use the weapons of private equity groups. They use the weapons of public financial markets like NASDAQ and New York Stock Exchange to be able to raise capital for the Silicon Valley behemoths that end up controlling the rest of the world. Now, when we look at the record companies and we, you know that Spotify only pays a pittance, you know, in regards to streaming revenue, and that the publishing companies, which are not usually owned by the artists from our community, get the lion's share of the proceeds from that. In order for us, everything in capitalist society can be purchased and bought. As a matter of fact, Sony EMI bought the remaining portion of Michael Jackson's half of the catalog for Sony ATV, which is represents about a third of the music produced around the world. They sold that for $750 million, way underneath what it's worth. But we have the influence of all of the hip-hop artists and the popularity of the swag that hip-hop brings to sell products around the world, where these artists can be able to turn their brands into public companies. And we can have a Beyonce Inc., a Jay-Z Inc., and we can be able to take them public or have them create special purpose acquisition corporations. And they have dollars to be able to do that. So we can be able to buy institutions to be able to control our own art forms, to be able to control our own banking systems, to be able to control our own currency. And when we have that financial capability so that we're not just being billion-dollar slaves, being paid by somebody else for our likeness. You know, Dave Chappelle said that he understood with Viacom what the word in perpetuity meant when he found out that when he signed his contract for the Dave Chappelle show, they owned his likeness forever. Okay? That's the definition of slave, when you look in the mirror and somebody else owns your face. Okay? In order for us to be able to reclaim that, there needs to be a revolution in thinking. We cannot use 20th century tactics in a 21st century battle. We need to move up to the modern times and use the modern tools of digital currency, crypto. The person who created Ethereum is a multi-trillionaire, okay? The people who created Bitcoin, okay, these are independent dollars and cents. Who you pay, the United States dollar, because of the Russian situation, is quickly falling. Anybody who read Fall of America should understand that one day that $100 bill is going to be lit up, you know, by millionaires to light their cigars. It won't be worth the paper it's written on. We need to be beginning to start using our value. We are black gold walking. Our ideas, our images, our culture is what made these multi-billion dollar industries, from country music to rock and roll music to our rhythm and blues music. We made those industries, and we should be dominating them with financial control. That means us stepping into place and buying the companies that own them. You know, why shouldn't we own Nike instead of Yeezy being produced by Nike? We should own it, you know, and we have enough. There's enough support from the dollars that are supported by people who love our entertainers. And if they can find the courage, the moral courage, to step against the masters that right now are holding their financial leashes, then we can be able to form a mass movement to where we can be able to own our own destinies and be able to create billion-dollar brands that they can leave to their families and break the trend of artists going broke when they die because someone else stole their legacy.
All right. Yes, sir.
And there it is.
Don't forget that farmland. Don't forget that farmland. Brother Warren, you were saying something.
Could I make this point right quick?
Go right ahead. Yes, sir. Please do.
Okay. Kanye West appeared on podcast Drink Champs. And everybody should really watch this because now he's being made out to be crazy by the media. But there's something behind all of that. Anyway, Kanye, I'll get right to the point. It was talking about him being involved with the attempt to the movement to free Larry Hoover. He was asked, so what made you be involved? He said, having economic and political freedom. See, I was involved because all my niggas was GDs. And then he was asked, were the GDs and the BDs opposites or enemies? He replied, and this is what I'm going to make. He replied, no, the opposite is Vivendi. You say, we're not opposite gangs at all, GDs, CDs, BDs. We're all on the blocks, and we don't have any political say-so. And Norris said, he was shocked. He said, did he just say Vivendi that owns Universal? That's the genius or the analysis that Kanye was making was, those are the gangsters.
Vivendi,
who was Vivendi? We know And I'll close with this. Who was Vivendi? Because this relates to the other part of our theme was the theater of war in media and entertainment. Because it's Minister Farrakhan is taught, business is warfare. So
that's
Vivendi
right.
is one of the largest media companies in the world that owns publishing, music, you name it, streaming, telecommunications, pay TV, and they're a Paris-based company. But this shocked me to find out that they also operate the number one water company in the world. Now, what does this have to do with war? If you recall, it was France that was one of the major cheerleaders and actors in the bombing and destruction of Libya.
That's right.
Libya happens to have had the great man-made river, which was a large irrigation system right in the heart of the desert, supplying water to his entire company. And not only that, it's set on something called the Nubian Sandstone Aquifer System, which is the world's largest known fossil water aquifer system. So this was part of the reason for the war that's never talked about. They talked about him killing his people, but it was gold, oil, and water. And
there
the number one water company in the world is this entertainment company that also controls the images, the content, and everything that's involved in what we see, hear, and feel. So I just want to try to make a brief connection between music, media, entertainment, and warfare that is much deeper than we think. And we've got to build out a whole world, as Brother Anton was just saying, and we have the resources to do it. We just need the unity.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you for that. Did anyone else have a comment relating to that point?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Let me jump back in here because I think everything that was just said is the part that we haven't developed, that we haven't taken a strong stance on. The part about Kanye West, they put in the media the crazy part, but they'll leave out the important parts that he's dropping. Kanye is in so many different circles that he's dropping so much knowledge, and we got to understand he's connected to the minister. He's had conversation with the minister. Kanye is not quote-unquote crazy in the sense that he don't know what he's talking about. And then it was something the other brother was speaking about owning stuff. One of the things that happened in Las Vegas, gangsters went out to Las Vegas. They said, we'll deal with politicians and the political later. Let's get our economic base. They made their money. Then they went and bought the politicians that they wanted to run what they wanted to do, their little world in Vegas. And that's the problem. We are so worried about We're not worried about the ownership. We're not worried about controlling. You know, one of the things that Master P did that was good is when he was selling his stuff, he know all the movies and all the things that he do. He produced his own stuff. He did his own
that's
stuff,
right.
But that was on a small scale, but that was an example. And that's why he's still having these conversations with folks, talking to these folks, and we're worried about everybody else and being on everybody else, being at everybody else's table instead of building and creating our tables. And the thing about it is we get happy when we build something and other folks come to us and want to be a part of what we built. And then they say, well, we'll partner with you or we'll be part owners with you. And that's so you know it's no longer ours. And we don't understand how to maintain the control and connect with others to continue to build. And that's why the brother said it's really a mindset because we have the resources if we follow the teachings, pull our resources together. And there's so many resources in different ways outside of just the finances that we can do some stuff. It's almost like one time somebody, one rapper, I'm not going to say his name, was being, they was complaining about his music and people coming in his house and loud noise. And I was like, the amount of money that you have, you can build a neighborhood. Like you literally can build a neighborhood, 20, 30 big mansions that you can live in on your own, but we still want to be around other folks and not control our own destiny. And at this point in time, the shifting of everything, we are in a place where we can't own and control our music. We can control our narrative. We can control everything. We just got to come together and do it. And it's nothing else but to make that happen. But we don't want to do that work. and we don't want to be the inventors or the creators of that. And those that are doing it, and let me be very clear, those that are trying to do it are always undermined or defunded or quickly turned away from the support of building that industry and made to look like you're just mom and pops and not understanding that every quote-unquote mom and pops had a beginning before it came an Apple, a Google, or Internet, or whatever it is. And but other folks are capitalizing off these startups and these businesses, and the brother said, become billionaires and trillionaires. And I actually was, went to Puerto Rico a couple of years ago before the pandemic with one of the guys around Bitcoin that was one of the billionaires. And again, you would have never known that that was a billionaire. You would have never known that he had all this money and was doing all these different things. But we want to be seen so much that we forget to actually own everything and let everybody else see our world without necessarily knowing the hand that rocks the cradle.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, we're out of time, and this has been a wonderful show. I just want to throw out there what Brother Warren talked about warfare. I think two points that Minister Scott brought up in his article is that we have to deal harshly with an entertainment industry that has had our young people dancing their way to destruction for over three decades and allowing rich white executives to keep the minds of our children trapped in a maze of mischief. You know, we really, this is very imperative that we take control and start making sure that the impacts are positive. So I want to thank you all for coming on, Brother Carino, Brother Attorney Warren Muhammad, Brother Anton F. Muhammad, Brother Terrence, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And so, Brother Anton, was there some information you wanted to give that people can contact you or if people are interested? You know, is there any information that you wanted to give on how to contact you?
Yes. Our information is on our website, www.rhn.tv. Also, you can connect with us on Twitter at @RHN_TV. And also, the company number is 202-379-3115. Yeah, and you can be able to hit us up, you know, or DM us on Facebook, Facebook at The Real Hip Hop Network. And those are the ways they can get in touch with us.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. And Brother Carino, I know Brother Carino has a YouTube channel that is fabulous. Brother Carino, give us your information on how to find that YouTube channel, Brother Carino.
Yes, ma'am. Real quick, and just want to thank you. Thank y'all again for having me a part of this conversation. And I hope that everything that everyone said will be greatly a benefit to everybody who was listening. Yeah, my YouTube channel is The Real Carino, as well as my Twitter. And I'm not hard to find. Just look me up. Thank y'all.
Yes, sir. And you have a show on 90.1 as well as your Twitter. Okay. And Brother Warren, you want to give us your information as well?
Yes, just drop me a line through email at Warren@WFMLawFirm.com.
All righty. Well, thank you all for listening to the Elevated Places Network Presents A Time for Justice. I would like to thank the Elevated Places team. That's Sister Donna Muhammad, Brother Terrence Muhammad, and my producer, Sister Samaya Muhammad, Sister Rona Muhammad also is on the Elevated Places Network team. And, of course, we would like to thank our sister, Dr. Minister Ava Muhammad, who, again, listen to her show. Her show comes on at Thursday. That is the Elevated Places Network. Ask Dr. Ava. That's at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. And that's Sister Student Minister Dr. Ava Muhammad, and that's the Ask Dr. Ava show. Thank you all once again for listening, and tune in next week for more informative discussions. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum salam.
Wa alaikum salam.